and continue a journey this summer through the Psalms, and it is inevitable that we should land in one of the Psalms of Ascent. There are 15 of them, from Psalm 120 to Psalm 134, all of them rather brief, and all of them to be prayed and recited as the pilgrims would make their journey toward Jerusalem. And one of the Psalms goes this way. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. My soul is like the weaned child that is with me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So here is a truth about the spiritual life that nobody ever tells a rookie. It is possible to become cynical. Now we know this. From experience, we know if we stay in anything long enough, we can grow weary, even spiritually weary. And worse than that, we might become jaded or disconnected. It's possible to lose sight of the forest by bumping into the trees. Those first bursts of enthusiasm are often tempered by the realities of family or job or congregation. And we know it doesn't always begin that way. The children might first discover the love of Jesus and then realize that mom and dad are not as excited as they are. We're at the end of a soul-stirring week of a youth work camp. The teenager is met by an impatient parent who jangles the car keys and says, "Hurry up, come on, get your things, it's time to go home." Or sometimes a new member will join a congregation with a burst of enthusiasm, only to be surrounded by a few of the old crows. And someone might go through a season of revival, start praying or reading the Bible, only to discover how thick the Bible actually is, and realize that prayer and answers to prayer don't come automatically. Or it has happened even to some of the brand new ministers that I've spent time with. They come fresh from seminary, ready to go out and serve the gospel and serve the real church. And it's the real church they find, all right. The old kind of fashioned church, the sinners still inside it. As we live the Christian life, there are many things that can temper our excitement. Sometimes we're frustrated by the people around us. Other times we're disappointed with ourselves and our own lack of spiritual progress. It sounds to me that the brief confession of Psalm 131 comes from a frustrated pilgrim. She has been at the journey for a while. In a psalm that sounds like it might have been written late at night, the pilgrim surveys her soul and reports what she sees. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. The destination is Jerusalem and all it represents. The journey is toward the temple, the festival, the celebration, the holy reunion. And on the face of it, this is a noble pursuit. Yet here we have the confession of someone who knows about the details and the hassles of travel. There are donkeys to be packed, lodging to be found, meals to be procured, and children to be handled. Anyone who takes a trip, goes on the road, knows that travel is not an uplifting experience. So a pilgrimage is both a holy journey and a pain in the neck. If you and I had the opportunity, we could circle up our chairs and complain about the trips that we've taken. choose your topic, the price of fuel, the canceled reservations, the underwhelming food, the charges for baggage, indifferent tech agents, phones that do not work somewhere else, filthy accommodations, to say nothing of all those other obnoxious tourists. It's enough to make you think twice about ever leaving home. The heart is not lifted up over the details of travel. And the psalmist adds, my eyes are not raised too high. Not only so many travel details on the way to Jerusalem, but the excursion is not always a lofty, heart-stirring occasion. If you were these days to journey to Bethlehem to see the birthplace of Jesus, you would have to wade through the trinket sellers in Manger Square. If you were to approach the ruins of Corinth, the ancient city where the Apostle Paul preached the gospel, the irreverent travel guide might mention it was a sailor's town with brothels going all the way up the mountain. What were you expecting, heaven on earth? There are so few glimpses of heaven, I'm afraid. Just a lot of earth. During a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, my father and I had the rare opportunity years ago to travel to Nablus, a community in the West Bank. We were so excited about the day. Nablus is the location of the well where Jesus met a woman in the fourth chapter of John, a Samaritan woman. They had a conversation. He opened up life to her. So we got there, and the tour bus is parked on a street full of broken glass. We traipsed into an unfinished chapel, long interrupted by Palestinian-Israeli skirmishes. Then we descended an uneven staircase through layers of accumulated beeswax. But we got to the well and we circled it. And each of our group took a sip of fresh water. The New Testament professor retold the story, drew out some insights. And just then, as we were beginning to imagine the Lord speaking to us at this well, a surly priest with a foot-long beard interrupted and said, okay, enough of that. Move along. Another group is right behind you. Buy your postcards and candles over here. Believe me when I tell you, my eyes were not lifted up too high. And then the psalmist says, I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. How did she know? How did she know that so many Christians expect to be brought in the presence of something great and marvelous, only to discover that it's the same jumbled mess of humanity that exists everywhere else? There I was on the white wicker furniture in the place, Western New York Conference Center. A man was telling me about his disappointment with his church. I thought this was my vacation, but no, he had to complain about his church. It was a tall pulpit in the major city. They had a wonderful preacher. They paid him extremely well. In addition to his hefty salary, he also had a $90,000 annual expense account designated for however he wanted to spend it, including taking people out to dinner or golf lessons or free prep school tuition for his kids. Now, there were rumors about him, but they were quickly dismissed as jealousy. Nobody paid much attention because when he preached, it was great and marvelous. Everybody was so impressed. And then they all discovered he had a girlfriend who posted his emails and text messages online to a blog, and his third wife got a little hot about it and left him rather publicly. And then somebody announced that wasn't this the same behavior we heard he might have exhibited across the state? And then three prominent church leaders on their own huddled together and agreed to pay him $500,000 if he would just quietly slip away. Well, the word got out about that. His denomination circled in, and they moved quickly to press charges, but that's when the reverend got up and quit his membership, renounced the jurisdiction so nobody could touch him, nobody except God. So we're sitting on this white wicker furniture, as the church leader's telling me this story with tears in his eyes, and he says, "I will never go back to that church or any church ever again. I cannot believe it. I can't believe he got away with it." He was shocked and dismayed to discover the Christian church has sinners in its pulpits and in its pews. And he was sufficiently dismayed that he no longer occupies with things too great or too marvelous for himself. All of us who have put in our time living the faith are tempted to lower our eyes, to reduce our expectations, to settle for what is trivial or ugly. And lay that along the fact that sometimes there's something about the holiness of God that brings out the worst in people. The immense grace of God will expose the pettiness of the church. And the faithful will stop looking so high and settle for something far less than God. Friends, there are hundreds of distractions along the spiritual journey. People will take all kinds of emotional detours that often lead to dead ends. In my years as a pastor, I've known folks who slip away over the color of the sanctuary paint, or the choice to provide hospitality to a group of outsiders, or the selection of curriculum, or the use of Folgers crystals during coffee hour. Oh, that was a notable one. And it was not just that people switched congregations so they could get upset somewhere else. What's troubling is they stopped going anywhere at all because of paint, strangers, curriculum, and instant coffee. In fact, just the other day, a friend told me why a family stopped attending her church. It had to be a really good reason, right? Well, one of the church deacons noticed the family had been absent, so he phoned to say he missed them, and they were so offended by the attention they decided to stay away, which they had already been doing. I can understand the psalmist's confession, can't you? O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. Depending on how we read it, it could sound like self-disgust. Or some scholars say the nuance is actually one of humility, that the psalmist is admitting, Lord, I know, and I really am rather small-minded. Save me from my pettiness. Now, we do not know the circumstances. As with many of the psalms, the splinters of particularity have been sanded away. But what we do have is that remarkable middle verse. I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. It points to one of the great, the ultimate benefits of faith, consolation. We may hold the heartfelt knowledge that even if there are cranky and cynical Christians around us, at the heart of all faith is some real help. Forgiveness really can happen. New beginnings happen all the time. Truth can be told, and God's grace will always cover our imperfections. And God is the one who keeps us calm and quiet. What's also remarkable is this psalm sounds like it was written by a woman, by a mother. I imagine her gazing down upon the nursing child upon her breast. It prompts her to remember that faith provides the basic food of life. And we are fed by hope, specifically that the hope of the God of Israel is greater than all of our limitations and our short-sightedness. The very one who brought Israel out of Egypt will not allow us to be captive to our fears. So she says, like the child who is upon me, so is my soul calmed by the Lord. One scholar suggests this poem is a lullaby, a mother's song for a whimpering infant. How appropriate. Don't let the small stuff upset you, she prays. Lean down and rest upon your mother. This is the call to consolation. The invitation to just settle down, trust God, let go of the trouble, and fall asleep. Some of us remember that experience acutely, even if our mothers have been gone for a while. So in many ways, this psalm resembles another famous lullaby from the scriptures. Another verse from the Psalms, where somebody has actually called it the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep verse. It's the verse from Psalm 31. You may remember the words. Into your hands I commend my spirit. Jesus quotes those very words when he is on the cross in deep trouble. And then he goes to sleep confident that all is in his parents' care. So when we're tempted to count our troubles, where do we get the consolation that will allow us to rest? When critiques and complaints threaten to drag us down, where do we really put our trust? Not merely with one another, but with the God who in this text is pictured as an attentive nursing mother. And the psalm's invitation is this: cuddle in close to the one who loves you. Don't worry. Stop fretting. Be still. Oh, I know. Life can be difficult. In fact, it is. It can be long enough and hard enough to invite cynicism. And with the psalmist, we might confess, my heart is not lifted up, my eyes are not too high, I am preoccupied with things not as great and marvelous as God. And we confess these things until we're free of them. We can never let these complaints enslave us. But when we get them off our chest, God's invitation remains to cuddle down. Take a breath and stop worrying about whether or not you're in charge of running the world. And the words from favorite hymn now linger as a prayer. Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fainting be, Lord, let me never, never outlive my love to thee.